welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. My guest today is John East, the former CEO of Actel. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Dan.
As most of you know, John started his career in the semiconductor business at Fairchild 54 years ago. A year ago, John did a podcast with us dealing with the Traitorous Eight, which is the eight super scientists who broke away from Bill Shockley, the man who invented the transistor. They went on to form Fairchild Semiconductor, the company responsible for the invention of the integrated circuit. John's written a book on some of his experiences he had during those 54 years. The book is called Silicon Valley, The Way I Saw It. It's available on Amazon. I have a copy on my desk, actually, an autographed copy. Thank you, John. Today, John's going to share with us the history of Fairchild and the way he saw it. So, John, back in the SemiWiki podcast number six, you took us through the story of the Traitorous Eight and the beginning of Fairchild. Can you just briefly touch on that?
Sure. Here's a quick summary, Dan. William Shockley and two associates invented the transistor in 1947. And in 1955, he formed Shockley Semiconductor. He hired the best minds in the world. In fact, he put together maybe the most brilliant team ever assembled. But he was a bad boss, a tyrant. And eventually, eight of them decided that they couldn't stand it. They resigned en masse with no idea what they were going to do. And Shockley obviously hated that. He named them the Traitors Eight, and that name stuck. It's still used today. Soon after, they met Sherman Fairchild. Now, Sherman was the chairman of Fairchild Camera. Together, they formed Fairchild Semiconductor in 1957, and it was to be a division of the parent company, Fairchild Camera. The company's president was Bob Noyce, who had been one of the Traitorous Eight. And what did Fairchild Semiconductor do? Well, they made transistors, because the IC hadn't been invented yet. Now, the big problem in those days, though, wasn't making transistors. The big problem was the wire problem. Now, lots of you are saying to yourselves, the wire problem, what was that? Well, even back then, the chip of a transistor, and by the way, today I'll refer to that as a die very often, because at Fairchild, what other people called chips, Fairchild called them die or dice. So anyway, the chip, the dice for a transistor was really a pretty small thing. So you could imagine having a million transistors. The transistors themselves would fit in a volume maybe the size of a bowling ball back in those days. But to connect a million transistors, you might need a billion wires. 1 billion insulated copper wires soldered at both ends? Unthinkable. It was unthinkable then, and it's still unthinkable now. Because of the wire problem, the primary use of transistors in 1958 was in radios, not in computers or other digital apps. Then, in 1959, Bob Noyce invented the integrated circuit. At just about the same time, Jack Kilby, who worked at Texas Instruments, which, by the way, from here on out, I'll call that TI, also invented the integrated circuit. So you'd ask, what was the difference? How did Noyce's IC differ from Kilby's? Well, earlier in 1958, Jean Orny, who was one of the Traitorous Eight and who worked at Fairchild, had invented the planar process. And the planar process allowed wires to be placed directly on the silicon without shorting it up. Now, Noyce knew about the planar process because Orny worked for him, but Kilby didn't know about it. So Noyce's invention put the wires directly on top of the silicon. And that meant that Noyce's invention solved the wire problem. Kilby's didn't. And that allowed Fairchild to jump into the lead, a pretty good place to be in an industry that would someday grow to $1 trillion, or actually maybe more like $500 billion annually. Not long after that invention, startup mania began. Every one of those Traitorous Eight left Fairchild to do startups. And one of them, a man named Gene Kleiner, eventually started the venture capital industry in Silicon Valley when he formed Kleiner Perkins.
Right. Hey, thanks, John. That's a great summary. So Fairchild was the first to market in a market that's now, as you said, it's $600 billion. That's great, but how did it all play out?
Not so well, Dan. History tells us that the first strong supplier in a new emerging market usually wins. And you can look at some history. IBM was first in mainframes and they dominated it while there was a mainframe market. DEC dominated mini computers while there was a mini market. Sun dominated workstations. You can even get out of the high tech area and look at Xerox, who dominated copiers for a couple of decades. Kleenex, I think they still dominate facial tissue. But it didn't play out that way this time. So why not? There were a couple of major issues that got in the way. First issue, the question of making an IC versus the question of what IC you make. The first ICs were made using RTL circuit design techniques. RTL was an acronym for resistor transistor logic. RTL had terrible problems, and it was obvious that something better was needed. So in 1964, Fairchild announced a new logic family using DTL circuit design techniques, diode transistor logic, and it was way better than RTL. But at almost exactly the same time, TI announced a new family using TTL techniques, transistor-transistor logic. And TTL was better than DTL. Now, it's hard to explain all those differences without a picture. For the people that are truly curious, it's explained in my book, Silicon Valley, the way I saw it. The second issue was management. TI was a mature company. They've been around since 1930, selling instruments for seismic kinds of events, et cetera, et cetera. And so they had a mature management team in place, and they employed a management tool that they called OST. They probably still use it, but I used to hear about it a lot 30 years ago. OST was objective, strategy, tactics. Now, so what was that? They'd decide on the objective that they wanted to go after. They'd delineate the strategies that we're going to use to get there. And then the individual things that we're going to do, they called the tactics. So they had a battle plan for whatever they wanted to get done. And what they wanted to get done was own the IC market. The first focus was on cost structures. Back in the mid-60s, even then, the die, the chip, of a gate just cost a few pennies, but the package back then, the thing that you see when you buy one that has the little leads coming off of it and the marking on it, that package cost 25, 30, 35 cents back then. So that was kind of a no-brainer. The package cost maybe 10 times as much as the die. Let's focus on the package, and they did. And in a relatively short period of time, they got the package down to a dime, and they eventually got it down to around a nickel for what we called a 14-pin dip. Dual inline package, because that's what gates were sold at. And that was a lot less than Fairchild's package, so they had that big advantage. On the other hand, Fairchild's managers were just kids. Nobody had ever managed anything or anybody before their jobs at Shockley. To their credit, they recognized this problem, and they hired a mature guy, a man named Ed Baldwin, to head up the operations. But Baldwin left shortly thereafter to do a startup named Ream. Ream was later bought by Raytheon, and they in turn were later bought by TRW. So Baldwin was the first example of Fairchild being the victim of the Silicon Valley startup craze that they'd created. So while TI focused on manufacturing and costs, Fairchild focused on R&D, on new technologies like MOS, PMOS, CMOS, silicon gate, four-phase circuits, oxide isolation, et cetera, et cetera. And that's no surprise, because the traders say we're scientists and R&D is what they did. So they just kept doing it. Now, that wasn't a stupid thing to do. It's not as though none of those projects panned out. In fact, all of those things did pan out, just not at Fairchild. They panned out at startups. Again, Fairchild was the victim of the startup craze that they had created. Now, a friend of mine, Federico Fagin, just wrote a book called Silicon. I have a copy of that on my desk. It's a good book. Federico was the man who developed the first microprocessor at Intel, And in his book, he tells a story about developing Silicon Gate when he worked at Fairchild, but then he moved on to Intel, where they actually cashed in on Silicon Gate. And that story was all too common. They'd start the development work at Fairchild, somebody would break away, do a startup, and the startup would be the one that cashed in. Now, TI had none of those problems. They were the only game in town, and they had an if you leave, you can never come back policy. Now, it's true that later on, TI was often referred to as the training institute, but that came later. Back in the early days, nobody ever left TI. What TI developed, TI kept. In any event, the head-to-head TI versus Fairchild battle had begun.
So how did the TI-Fairchild battle play out in the longer run? I mean, clearly TI is the dominant force today, but how did that play out?
Not well, Dan. Due in large part to their cost advantage, by 1967, TI had taken over the lead. They became the largest supplier of integrated circuits and stayed that way for a long, long time. Even worse, though, Fairchild was soon passed by Motorola and then later by National Semiconductor. And those were the three enemies when I joined in 1968. TI, Motorola, National. Those were the bad guys if you worked at Fairchild. Now, it's true that Intel came along in 1968, and they were a direct spin-off from Fairchild. But Fairchild and Intel rarely competed directly in the same markets. In any event, by the early 70s, the Fairchild death march had already begun. They were quickly becoming irrelevant. They were on their way out.
So what do you mean on their way out? I mean, how could that be that they invented, you know, the integrated circuit?
Yeah, they did. And I tell you what, Dan, it didn't seem fair to me. In my view, there were three factors that were major contributors to the Fairchild crashing and burning. First factor, they were victims of the culture they had created, the startup-driven turnover. And I've already talked about a couple of examples of that. They developed something, somebody else would cash in. Second, MOS happened. All the early integrated circuits were based on bipolar technology, not MOS. In the early days, we just couldn't make MOS work right. But Fairchild did the lion's share of the early work on MOS. Still, they never really cashed in on significant sales. It was the startups that cashed in on the sales. And third, product planning. Again, kind of a question of making an IC versus what IC you make. To see this, compare Fairchild with Intel. During their first 3 years, Intel came out with great new products based on new concepts. SRAM, DRAM, microprocessors, floating gate memory. Those were all wonderful new products based on new technologies. And Fairchild, well, not much, Dan. The exception was the 702 op amp. That did really well. It later became the 709 op amp and was a great product. But that came in 1964. What about after 1964? It's a pretty short list, Dan. What was it that Fairchild came out with that you had to have? Pretty short list. So the bottom line, turnover plus MOS failures added to inadequate product planning led to a death march.
Yeah, you keep saying death march. That's a pretty dark term. So this can't have a happy ending. Go ahead and tell us, how did it end?
Well, as you've already surmised, Dan, it ended badly. They lost ground year by year. Eventually, the stock market didn't value them at all. The stock was really cheap, and that made them an acquisition target. Offers started coming in to buy the company. And after a few courtships, eventually Schlumberger made an offer, which Fairchild accepted. And Fairchild became a division of Schlumberger. Schlumberger was, and in fact still is, a very, very successful supplier to the oil and gas industry. And it's good to be a successful supplier, right? But maybe not in this case. In this case, it led to hubris. Schlumberger appointed a financial type to be the CEO. He had no IC experience. He had no CEO experience either. In fact, he was a bean counter. So basically what they were saying was, this integrated circuit business looks easy to us. Well, trust me, the IC business is not easy, Dan. You and I have learned that. So they dumped a ton of money into it, but most of it was poorly spent. Money spent on fabs and assembly areas and test equipment wasn't going to pay off, given that they didn't have a meaningful set of products that the market needed. And the result, Schlumberger lost a lot of money on Fairchild. Eventually, they decided to sell it for whatever they could get. In fact, one of their spokesmen gave a quote that I'll never forget. "Silicon Valley ain't the oil business," he said. Well, he got that right. After some foreplay, they linked the deal with Fujitsu. It was for around $300 million. I don't think the exact amount was ever disclosed, but $300 million was the amount you kept seeing. $300 million for the company that once invented the integrated circuit, the company who at one time was the clear leader in both IC technology and marketing, that's not much. In fact, it's pretty pathetic. But the approval of the US government was required before the deal could be closed, and it never came. Fairchild was doing quite a bit of business with American military contractors at the time. And on top of that, Japan was recognized as being in the early stages of their now abandoned efforts to dominate the world IC business. And the plan, of course, was to take the business away from America. So the US government shot the deal down, and in my view, properly so. And then along came National Semiconductor. National offered $122 million. Well, how much is that? It's 0.05% of the market cap of Intel. That's right, 0.1% of just one of the many, many companies that Fairchild had helped to create. And Schlumberger took it. In fact, they jumped on it. So in 1987, Schlumberger sold Fairchild for next to nothing to one of Fairchild's most hated arch rivals, National Semiconductor. National later spun off a small piece of Fairchild, which was in turn eventually sold to ON Semiconductor. And as you know, Dan, ON was a spinoff from Motorola. And then finally in 2011, Texas Instruments bought National Semiconductor. Do you remember, Dan, Fairchild's arch rivals circa 1968? The companies that we were all about to hate when I got to Fairchild?
Yeah.
TI, National, and Motorola. And when the dust had settled, the mighty Fairchild sat in the hands of their once worst enemies, and the price the enemies paid, next to nothing. So if you believe in the afterlife, you have to believe that Sherman Fairchild turned over in his grave that day. And Dan, I wish I had a happier ending. It didn't. That's the way it went down.
Yeah, that's a good piece of history. You know, it's just amazing what TI has done.
It is. And they were the company I hated and loved at the same time. They, for a long, long, long time, were the biggest supplier of ICs in the world. But of course, then they got passed up by Intel and later by TSMC, Samsung. But they're still a tough company. They're a good company. And what little is left of Fairchild resides in their hands.
That's a great story, John. So much history. And, you know, it's amazing that TI is still a leader in their market. I have a great appreciation for TI, and a lot of the people that, you know, work there went on to do great things, like Morris Chang and Wally Rhines. But anyway, let's not forget, John's book is called Silicon Valley, The Way I Saw It. I've read it. It's a great book. You can get it on Amazon. And thank you again, John, for your time. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Dan, been my pleasure. Look forward to doing it again with you. Take care.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.